John had been exiled to the island of Patmos. He's either in his 60s or he's in his 90s. We don't know, depending on when you date the book of Revelation. I date it early. I date it in the 60s, and so I've got John somewhere in his 60s. But whether it was 60s or 90s, at that time, this was an old man. Average lifespan in the Roman Empire at that time would have been somewhere around 45. And so to live into your 60s and then, of course, into your 90s would have just been absolutely amazing. He's been exiled because of the gospel. I hold to the position that the war in Jerusalem had broken out and that the Jews were being persecuted. And even though John was a Jew, he was a Christian, but the Christians were being persecuted as well. And so I hold to the view that he had been exiled by Nero to Patmos because of his faith. Now, from one perspective, you think, what a great tragedy. This man of God, this apostle of Jesus Christ, now on this deserted island, basically. I mean, it would have had some people there, but not many at all. And yet, at the same time, Jesus, as he's speaking to John in the Revelation, says something to him about his being on the island. He ends chapter 1 with these words, "I hold the keys of death and Hades." It's his way of saying to John, yes, Rome put you here, but I allowed them to do it. Yes, Caesar banished you here, but I put you here for a reason and a purpose, and I am going to work through that to accomplish my will, regardless of what man does. And so here's John, reminded that God is still with him and is speaking through him as we listen to him 2,000 years later. He's writing to John, and as you move into chapters 2 and 3, you're introduced to what's called the seven churches of Asia. These are churches that were located literally off the coast of Patmos. Patmos would have been a small island just to the southeast of Ephesus. Ephesus is very likely where John had been before being exiled. And so God, speaking through Jesus, through an angel to John, writes to these seven churches. Seven churches that are listed simply in the order of the roads that you would travel to see them. And so it begins with, over on this side, Ephesus, going up to Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and finally to Laodicea. And as you made that circuit, they would take this book, this letter, and they would read to each of these churches the message God had sent to them. Now, when you turn to Revelation 2 and 3, you find that there's a pattern that Jesus uses to address his churches. He begins simply by saying to the angel of the church. Now, we don't know exactly what this means. Did each church at that time have an angel that somehow oversaw what went on in that church? Do they today? Does Hendersonville Church have an angel? And I would suggest to you that that is a very likely possibility. You know, you go back to Jesus' words in Matthew 18 about little children. And this is where we get the concept of guardian angels. He says, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that they're angels in heaven." Now, I don't know if you can call them guardian angels or just angels. I'm reminded of the movie that we'll all probably be watching here in a few weeks. It's A Wonderful Life. Jimmy Stewart plays a character in that particular movie who is in need of help, and God sends him an angel. And I don't know if you remember Clarence the angel. And as they're sitting there talking about Clarence being his angel, Jimmy Stewart looks at him and said, "You'd be the kind of angel I would get." If you remember what Clarence was like. I don't know what kind of angels oversee us. I don't know what kind of angels oversaw these churches. But evidently there were some. He then said to John, write. fascinating little statement there. I want you to write to each of these churches, and he repeats it each time. I could just visualize John putting the pen to the papyrus as he writes these letters. He then refers to himself. All the way through, he goes back to this vision we looked at last week. This vision which kind of reminded John of Jesus, and then in so many ways did not. I mean, an image of Jesus where his hair was white like wool, his eyes was like burning flames. He had a sword coming out of his mouth. His legs were like bronze that was in the fire. I mean, it was an image of Jesus that you just kind of like go, wow, and you have to step back. John, in fact, fell at his feet as one dead. But Jesus will grab different images out of that entire vision to describe himself as he's writing to each of these churches. And then he'll say something amazing. He'll say, I know. And then he begins to describe each of these churches in detail. And not just churches, but individuals in these churches as well. I mean, I can just vision Jesus right now saying, I know the church at Hendersonville. I know, and then he starts picking out different individuals in this church, describing where we are spiritually. That's what he did to these churches. You know, one of the things that we need to be reminded of is what the psalmist said in Psalm 139. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend up to the heavens, Lord, you're there. If I go down to the depths of Sheol, you're there. I love the middle part of the verse. Notice what he says there, verse 9. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea. What's he saying? He's saying if you hopped on American Airlines and flew halfway around the world, guess what? God would still be there. I mean, it's the language that back then they would get on the wings of the morning. We would get on, of course, an airplane. The point of the psalmist is, God knows when we get up. He knows when we live throughout the day. He knows when we lie down at night. I mean, God knows us inside and out. And Jesus said that of these churches. He then goes into the main part of his letters, which is these places where he commends them and then places where he disciplines them. And we're going to look at that in a little bit more detail here in just a second. He then ends with promises of divine reward to those who are faithful to the end. And then he tells them, and I love this phrase here, whoever has ears, let him hear. And you go, why would he say that? Because he had heard Jesus say it. This was one of Jesus' favorite phrases. And I could just see John thinking, you know what? Jesus said this all the time. If you've got ears, you better pay attention. Because what I'm telling you is important. Now, when you look at this whole list of messages to the churches, he tells us that here's the reason I'm telling you these things. You get down to the end of chapter 3, and this comes out of the message. This is Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the text, but I really like it. The people I love, I call to account. The people I love, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to prod you and correct you and guide you. And I love the last part here. Up on your feet then, about face. Run after God. Now what's Jesus doing here? He's doing the same thing that a lot of people did yesterday, scattered throughout the United States. I don't know how many of you watch football. This time of year, you know, that's what you do on Saturdays. Now let me just tell you, in my family, June is the person who loves sports. I like sports. June loves sports. You know, I'll say to June, what's the big games today? And she'll rattle them off. And I'll say, who coaches for those teams? And she'll rattle them off. And I'll say, what are their records? And she'll rattle them off. And then I go back to the office and work on something else. And so, but now we did last night, we watched last night the Oklahoma-Baylor game. How many of you happened to watch that game last night? Okay, a good percentage of the church watched that game. It was an incredible game. The first half belonged to Baylor. Baylor was undefeated. And boy, they looked like an undefeated team the first half last night. They absolutely delivered a whooping to Oklahoma. And then I think at halftime, this happened. The Oklahoma coach said, you know what, guys, we're not out of this yet. And they came back in the second half, and Oklahoma put a whooping on Baylor. And if you've got it on DVR, I apologize, Oklahoma won. Okay, just to let you know. It was a great game, but it was a game that involved coaches who were trying to say to guys, you can do better than this. I like another image that comes out of this picture called the life coach. I don't know if you have a life coach in your life, but these have become quite popular. And it's where you hire someone, literally a professional, who helps you reach a goal or make a change in your life. I love this next line up here. They help you get out of your head and start taking action in the areas of your life that you wish to change. What's a life coach? Life coach is someone who takes your dreams, your hopes, your goals, and says, now let's move them from up here into real life. Let's make them real. And you know, in so many ways, that's what Jesus is. Here in Revelation 2 and 3, he's the church's and he's the individual Christian's spiritual life coach. He's basically saying, listen, this is what I created you to be. This is where you're messing up in the process. And here's what you need to do to get back on track again. And I love just the way he does it in this short little section of Revelation. Jesus says to us all, I've come that you may have life and have it to the full. But you only can do that if you listen to the coach. It's that simple. And so as you turn to this book, you see this message to the churches. If you've got ears, you need to hear what the Spirit says. And notice the plural there, to the churches. This is basically Jesus' way of saying, yes, I've got a message to the church at Ephesus, but you in Smyrna will benefit from it. And yes, I have a message to Thyatira, but you in Philadelphia will benefit from it. Yes, I have a message to Laodicea, but all of my churches will benefit from it. And so what you have Jesus saying to us 2,000 years later, do you have ears? You need to hear what I said to the churches, because what I said will apply to you as well. You know, he begins with the church at Ephesus. John Micah read this a few moments ago. And if you stopped with verse 3, you would go, yes. I mean, look what he says. I know your deeds, your hard work, your perseverance. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked people, that you've tested those who claim to be apostles, but they're not. You found them to be false. You've persevered. You've endured hardships for my name and have not grown weary. By the way, that's what they said of Baylor at the end of the first half last night. I mean, Baylor thought, boy, we've hung in here, we've fought, we've persevered, we're going to win. Only problem is, that's not the complete picture. You see, you hear that, and boy, if that was us, we would all probably say, yes, look how good we are. But then he says this, that you've abandoned your first love. I'm reminded of a house that you go to see, and you walk into the house and you start looking around, and it's beautifully decorated. It's got this wonderful layout, and you look at the house and it just seems to be in superb condition. And then you say, can I go down in the basement? And the realtor says, well, you know, there's really nothing down in the basement for you to see, but I want to go down in the basement. And then you go down in the basement, and when you go down in the basement, you begin to look and you see cracks in the wall. You see cracks in the concrete. You see a foundation that's not what it's supposed to be. And that's exactly the point that he's making to the church at Ephesus. He says, listen, you've got so much going for you, but your foundation is rotting. You've left your first love. Do you remember your first love? Do you remember your first love of Jesus? I mean, how many of you remember when you were baptized? Do you remember when? How many of you remember the name of the person who baptized you? I'm oftentimes surprised at people who I'll say, who baptized you? And they go, the preacher down at so-and-so. Yeah, what was his name? I don't remember. You know? But do you remember how you felt when you came up out of the water? Do you remember the load that was lifted off your shoulders? I remember so well what it felt like. I mean, even though they sang that song, oh, happy day. Even though they sang that, I was still happy. I really was. Because I'd finally obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. Do you remember your first love? When you first knew this is the person you wanted to spend the rest of your life with? I mean, do you remember what it was like to say, will you marry me? You know, I tell people all the time, I'm unique in this one sense, and that is, June's the only person I ever dated. Now, it wasn't from a lack of trying. It was June was the only one to say yes. And so when she said yes, I thought, I better keep this girl. But I still remember that summer when we started dating. Basically, what Jesus is doing here is he's saying, listen, you need to go back and you need to remember that first love. He comes to the church at Thyatira. He says, I know your deeds, your love and faith, your service and perseverance, and that you are now doing more than you did at first. And again, you look at it, you think, man, what a compliment to this particular church. But he says, but you tolerate that woman Jezebel. Well, when I look at this, I think, what was it like in the church at Thyatira that Sunday? Can you imagine the guy coming from John and said, I got a letter from John. By the way, it's also from Jesus. And he gets up to read it. And as he's reading it, he says, by the way, I have something against you. You tolerate that woman named Jezebel. Now, that wasn't her real name. But everybody in the church knew who she was. And can you imagine everybody in the church all at once doing like Tony said this morning, looking to their right? You know, everybody staring at her and this woman going, why are you staring at me? He says, you got a problem. There's someone causing problems in my church and you tolerate her. He says to the church at Sardis, I know your deeds. You have a reputation for being alive, but you're dead. You're just bum dead. Have you ever attended a dead church? I have. I actually worked for a church that really was kind of like the church here at Sardis. I mean, it was a church that across the road was the funeral home. And I got to be honest with you, there were some Sundays I thought there was more life over there than in the church I was at. I'm like, man, alive is dead around here. And sometimes we can become dead. I can become dead because, again, I forget who I am in Jesus Christ. To the church at Philadelphia, I know your deeds. See, I've placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength. Boy, I love this encouragement. You don't have but a little bit going with you, but you know what? You keep on going, even with that little strength. And I just promise you, the door I've opened, I will not close because you've not denied my name. And so here's the question. If God was writing to us today, what would he say? What would he say positive? What would he say negative? And I've only been here a little over a year and a half. And so I know I still don't have a complete picture of the church at all. I don't know if I ever will, but I know I don't have at this point. But I have enough that I can pick up a few things that I think God would say. I think, for instance, if God was pointing out the good things, he would say, I do know your love and faith and service and perseverance. 126 years now, you've been meeting in Hendersonville, and you've been trying to make a difference in that community in my name. And I appreciate that faith and love and service that you have shown to this community. I think he would say that, just like he said to the church at Ephesus. I know your love for children and families with the young children. Listen, let me tell you, our children's ministry is one of the best around. I love our day school. I mean, we've got several here who work in our day school, and I just can't tell you how exciting it is to be around these children. Every morning as I'm coming in, here's parents coming in with their kids and watching them walk into our day school over here. And then to walk through the day school and to hear them singing songs about God and Jesus And I mean, that wells up in my heart. Our Sunday school classes, our Wednesday night classes, the children who are worshiping in the back right now. I think God would say, boy, I appreciate what you're doing in the lives of our children and young families. I know you're concerned for the aged. Listen, the more and more I am around those who live over in the towers, the more I think what an incredible blessing to this community, and thank God for those who had the wisdom years ago to say, let's do something for those who are older in their life and need a place to live. Last Sunday, following church, I was with one of our small groups over at the towers, and we were sitting there, and Dennis Johnson was doing the lesson that day, and he was asking them, what are you thankful for? We've got Thanksgiving coming up. What are you thankful for? And a lady threw her hands up, and she said, I've been waiting for 2 years to get in the towers, and now I'm in, and I am just so thankful to God to be here. Thank y'all for having this place. I just got to tell you, my head swelled. My head got real big. Okay, some of you are thinking it's always been big. I know it, but it was bigger than that. Because we're just part of something that's wonderful. I mean, when I think of the Angel Tree program, and of us saying to people who struggle as they get older in life, as many of us have been had people in our families who have, and to think here's a church that cares and even wants to make their Christmas special, God would say, I know your concern. I know your care for the sick and physically struggling. Boy, when I think about our medical program that we have over here of giving medical supplies to people in need, and how that people literally will travel from Kentucky and Alabama and all over Middle Tennessee. Why? Because they hear of a church that says, you know what, if you need a wheelchair, you come to us and you don't have to pay us anything for it. You need a walker, you come to us. You don't have to pay anything. You need a bed, you come to us. And we're going to let you have it for free. We only ask that when you get through, you give it back so that we can bless someone else's life. And folks, listen, every week we bless the lives of those who are struggling with health problems because of a medical ministry that touches lives. And I know the great physician would be proud of it. I know you're concerned for tomorrow's church. I mean, we got kids who are out today because they're on a retreat. As our youth ministers say, we want to try and instill as much of Jesus in you as we can. We're making a difference. But then on the other hand, I know there would be things he'd say, but. And I want us to be honest about it. He would say to some of us, you have abandoned your first love. An audience this big, I know that there are people here who at one point you were on fire for God, but that fire has long since been extinguished. The commandment to love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind isn't quite there anymore. And I know he would want to say, repent. Get back to loving me like you once did. I think he would say to some of us, you tolerate some things. I don't know a false teaching that we tolerate here at Hendersonville. Maybe there's some there that I'm not familiar with, which is very possible. But I suspect it's not so much we tolerate false teaching as we tolerate sometimes Christians who are living in ways that they shouldn't be living. And because of that, it brings shame upon the name of the Lord and upon our church. Sometimes we tolerate things that we shouldn't tolerate. I think you would probably say to us also, I found some of your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. Some of us started out well. And unlike the Apostle Paul, who said, you know what? I strike a blow to my body. I make it my slave so that after I preach to others, I won't be disqualified. A lot of us have given up and we've just kind of walked off the track. And it's time that we get back in the race. Lukewarm. My throat's bothering me. And so during our song service, right before I came up, Blake, I had a thing of coffee over here. And so I reached over and took a swig of the coffee. It's not coffee you'd want to drink right now because it's not hot and it's not cold. And Jesus said, I'd spew it out of my mouth. I mean, some of us, that's where we are spiritually. Paul says, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor. The Greek literally there is keep your fire burning. Don't let it go out. And then the last one. And I got to be honest, this is the one that bothers me most, because it's the one that Satan tries to reel me in probably most on. These are the words he said to the church at Laodicea. You say, I am rich, I've acquired wealth, and I do not need a thing. We live in a country that has blessed us so much. We have nice cars we drive to church in. We have warm houses that we go home to live in. Most of our refrigerators are filled with food. In fact, we probably spend more time throwing things out than we do putting things in oftentimes. And I think about just the storage building business that we have. We're the only nation I know of that we build storage buildings just to keep the stuff that we don't have room to keep in our houses. I want y'all to think about that for a moment. What shall I do? Well, I'll just go and rent some more storage buildings and put all my goods there. Sounds almost biblical, doesn't it? And here Jesus says, but you don't realize you're wretched and pitiful and poor and blind and naked. He says, listen, when you get money as the primary goal of your life instead of God, and you're rich toward yourself, but you're not rich toward Him, he says, then you find yourself worshiping somebody other than the Lord God Himself, and that's called idolatry. You get to the end of chapter 3, and it's a strange passage. You have Jesus saying, here I am. I stand at the door, and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come in and eat with that person, and they with me. The tragedy of this verse, I mean, it's a beautiful verse in one sense, but the tragedy of it is that the door that he's knocking on is the door of his own church. It's not a stranger's door. It's not an unbeliever's door. It's the heart of his own people, because he's wanting back into our lives. And the question is, are you going to open the door and let him back in? Are you going to rekindle that first love? Are you going to get rid of that lukewarm spirit? Are you going to put Jesus back on the throne of your life instead of the wealth of this world? What's going to be first? That's the question. And I want you to know this, that right now, Jesus is knocking on our hearts. Right now. And the question is, are we letting him in? For some of you, you are. For others, you need to. And maybe you need to do it right now, as together we stand and sing.